This podcast was first broadcast on Mix 92.6. Go to mix92.6.com to find more Environment Matters podcasts and, if you enjoy what we do, to find out how you can support the station, which is run entirely by volunteers. I hope you enjoy the podcast. Welcome to Environment Matters with me, Amanda Yorworth. Environment Matters is the show that brings you news on issues of sustainability and the environment from around Hertfordshire and from further afield. Now later we're going to hear how to make sure that your four-legged friend is also a friend of local wildlife too. But first, well, we've got a bank holiday weekend coming up, so perhaps you've got something planned. We all like to take a break. Sometimes we're just looking for some chill time, but often we're looking for something, well, a bit more adventurous, something a bit wild. And I don't know about you, but when I think about an adventure break, I think of something like, oh, I don't know, trekking holidays in the Alps, or skiing in the Rockies, or water sports in the Mediterranean. Now, sadly, these holidays usually involve huge carbon emissions from flying to our destination. And whilst these emissions can be offset by paying to do things like plant trees, it's widely agreed that it would be better if the emissions didn't happen in the first place. Even driving somewhere in this country involves emitting greenhouse gases. And anyway, bank holiday traffic is usually awful. So can we find that adventure closer to home? Can we find wilderness on our doorstep? Well, local cyclist Mike Hartley thinks that he can. And at the start of 2023, he decided to set himself the challenge of a series of micro-adventures throughout the course of the year. With his first micro-adventure under his belt, I spoke to Mike and I started by asking where his micro-adventure idea had come from.
The name was come up with by a guy called Alistair Humphreys, who's an adventurer and author. It's just a local adventure. It's like a 5 till 9 adventure. So head off after work, ride or walk or go somewhere under your own steam, camp out overnight, and then head back in the morning in time for work. And that's exactly what I did.
So just tell us a little bit about what you did for your first micro-adventure.
I've been planning since, I'd say, autumn last year, just waiting for the weather to get a bit better. And I just cycled north for about 15 miles and put my tent up and camped out. And it was absolutely brilliant.
What were the other small delights you were able to take from your micro-adventure?
The ride was great. I was had stuff in bikepacking bags on my bike, and I was expecting to be really slow, but I wasn't. It was remarkably quicker than I expected. Loads of trees. I love woodland anyway. Some nice single track through the woods. It was really good. A good Hertfordshire adventure.
Okay, that sounds absolutely lovely.
It was absolutely perfect. I'm going to try out a few more over the coming months. It's certainly going to be a monthly excursion. Full moon nights are when I'm going to go.
Well, and that would be monthly as well, wouldn't it? So you obviously have done some planning as far as routes and potential camping sites go. Did you have to do any physical preparation for this?
Not really. I'm going out on my bike lots anyway and rebuilding my fitness after a road accident a couple of years ago. So no, nothing particularly special. But when I go for longer rides, I will have done a lot more fitness work to cope with the longer distances.
And has doing your micro-adventures given you a bit of motivation to do those longer rides and build up your fitness?
Absolutely, yeah. I have got a longer distance ride planned. I'm going to take the Icknield Way and then the Pedders Way and end up on the East Coast. So that's going to be a few days. I've got the route. It's long distance paths anyway. But I haven't quite worked out how long it's going to take yet, which will completely depend on fitness.
Indeed, that sounds like, well, not really that micro, quite a big adventure that one sounds like. And how about if we were thinking, oh, do you know, I quite fancy a micro adventure, as you say, either walking or cycling. Can you just give us a few hints and tips, things that you've learnt from your first adventure?
You don't need that much kit. Certainly for a bike, all you need is a bike that works. Bags are really useful. Bike packing trend bags are great because they don't bounce about like panniers do. But as long as you can carry the kit you need, that's all you need. You don't need really anything special. And the same with walking. I think as long as you can carry the pack that you've got, it's easy. Obviously, you need a sleeping bag. A bivy bag is really useful too. And a camping tarp so that you can set up a little shelter in case it rains. Then you just need some food and then some water. So it's really simple. There's loads of information on the internet. Just go out and do it. It's not hard.
Now, here in England, it is not legal to camp on somebody else's land without their permission. So you will need to ask the landowner's permission first. But even with permission, there are some ground rules that you should always follow, which Mike explained for us.
Leave no trace is a really, really fundamental thing. So leave nothing, no more than footprints. You wouldn't have seen where I camped in the morning. Because I moved the leaf litter off before I put the tent up and then put it all back. Pack in and pack out. So you take out all your litter. If you need to poo, dig a hole and take the toilet paper back out with you. And don't have fires. Whatever you do, do not have fires. So obviously there's a fire risk, but mainly it leaves big traces. You're going to char up the ground beneath you, take out all your litter and leave no trace.
Our thanks to Mike Hartley for that. But perhaps you're not planning on going away for Easter, but staying around and enjoying some of our lovely Hertfordshire countryside. And if you're planning a walk, well, who's coming along? Perhaps friends, family, children, or for a huge number of us, our dogs. Now, in the UK, there are a whopping 13 million dogs, with an estimated 250,000 dogs. That's 250,000 dogs living in Hertfordshire alone. Now, that is a lot of dogs, and the chances are that they'll all be out at some point over the weekend, which, if we're not careful, could be having a huge impact on Hertfordshire's wild flora and fauna. Now, as we know, wildlife here and throughout the British Isles is just about hanging on, but is in steep decline due to a whole multitude of factors: shrinking habitats, pesticides, invasive imported species, climate change, there's just to name a few. And without care, our dogs can be another factor driving wildlife over the edge. To find out more about what the effects of our dogs might be on local wildlife and what we can do to enjoy both our dog walks and the nature around us, I spoke to Stephen Werrell, Senior Project Officer at the Herts and Middlesex Wildlife Trust. Stephen, thank you ever so much for taking the time to join me today. So just to start off with, are you a dog owner?
I'm not at the moment, but my family's always had dogs and I'd love to have a dog in the future.
Oh, right. Okay, good to hear. Now, generally speaking, do you want to encourage us sometimes with our dogs to get out and enjoy the Trust's nature reserves?
Definitely. We like to have nature open for all. So that's dog owners and those who are interested in the nature alike to be able to enjoy our reserves responsibly.
Right. Okay. So generally, we're very welcome. Now, there are a lot of dogs locally, and you're understandably concerned about the potential negative effects that dogs might have on local wildlife. So let's start with something that we're all probably quite aware of. That's dog poo. Can you just tell us a bit, apart from it being a bit smelly and nasty, why is it particularly damaging for wildlife?
Well, it also contains or can have diseases in it, which can be spread onto grazing livestock and other animals that use our nature reserves as well.
Okay, now let's move to dog. You know, they've only got little feet, haven't they? But they've got twice as many as we have. And we do all love a bluebell wood walk. Why might there be an issue there?
Well, if we have dogs off the lead running through the bluebell wood, it's just similar to people walking through and potentially trampling on the flowers. Obviously, the dogs, they don't understand the beauty that we see in bluebells, and they'll just run through happily in a woodland. And although they're having fun and enjoying themselves, it is potentially trampling the bluebells, which are a spectacle and a really important natural part of our ancient woodlands.
Are other flowers affected in a similar way, or is it really mainly bluebells you're thinking about here?
No, we can apply this to other flowers. Wildflowers within our meadows and other flowers within our woodlands as well are susceptible to trampling. I think bluebells are just the one that are very showy and they're very prominent that we like to enjoy ourselves.
Yes, indeed. Okay. Now, moving sort of out of the woods now and into big open grassy spaces, and, you know, dogs often like a good run around somewhere like this. What might the issues be there?
Well, we've also got to think about ground nesting birds and other wildlife that may be on our nature reserves, particularly this time of year. It is bird nesting season in the spring going into the summer. So there may be birds nesting in the long grass that you can't see hidden far away. Unfortunately, if a nest does get disturbed by a dog, it's more than likely that the adult will flee off of either the eggs or if they have chicks, they'll flee away from the chicks.
Okay. And how are ground nesting birds doing generally around the county? Do they need our help? Are they particularly susceptible?
They definitely need our help. Ground nesting birds are declining across the county, mainly due to habitat loss, but also the interaction with people and with dogs does cause some issues where they are still able to nest.
Now, you mentioned the problem perhaps of dog poo spreading diseases to livestock, and the Trust does use livestock for conservation grazing on quite a number of its local nature reserves, cows, sheep and sometimes even ponies, I believe. What else might, apart from just the dog poo, what else might be the problems of dogs around livestock that you would want us to watch out for?
Yeah, so one of the main issues with dogs on nature reserves and in the countryside is well known as their disturbance to livestock, to sheep, to cows and ponies, as you'd mentioned. So as a responsible dog owner, we need to be cautious of that fact and need to behave in the correct way when we come across fields with livestock in there, whether that's sheep, but also cows and ponies and all the other livestock that may be out there on our reserves and in the countryside.
So, Stephen, you've outlined some of the potential problems there. So have you got some guidelines for us just to make sure that we can enjoy walking our dogs and enjoy wildlife at the same time?
Yes, definitely. So the most important guideline is to have your dog on a nice short lead under close control. It's really important that your dog is not running around freely within our nature reserves where there are livestock grazing. And the reason being is because they can run after and cause worry to the livestock. It's particularly important this time of year because we have lots of heavily pregnant ewes or potentially ewes with young lambs out on site, and your dog disturbing them cause quite a lot of worry. Heavily pregnant ewes can potentially even lose their lambs if chased by a dog. So the first tip is to keep them on a nice short lead. And secondly, I'd say the pathways within our nature reserves are designed to be kept to, and they will keep you away from where the most vulnerable and sensitive areas are. So our livestock know where those paths are and they know how to avoid you if they want to.
So, Stephen, some good easy pointers there. And how about if we're walking with friends who also have dogs?
Yeah, we encourage all people to our nature reserves, but just be wary that in groups with more dogs can cause even more worry to livestock and others. So perhaps choose somewhere without livestock if you are going to be walking in a big group of friends with lots of dogs.
Okay. Now, can you just tell us whether these guidelines you've just given us, do they apply just when you're walking around a local nature reserve with your dog? Or do you think that we should be mindful of them in other parts of the countryside as well?
No, definitely. They apply much more widely. So following the countryside code is really important in all areas of natural green space, not only on our nature reserves, but all of our neighbouring farmland and green spaces where there may be livestock or wildlife.
And Stephen, where's your favourite place to walk around Hertfordshire? Do you have a favourite nature reserve for a walk?
Yes, my favourite nature reserve will probably be Albury Nowers over near Tring. It's a lovely chalk grassland, and you can take a lovely walk around there, particularly in the spring and the summer when all the wildflowers are coming out. We had our livestock, our sheep up there recently. They've just come off, so it's a nice time to be able to go and have a look around and see the wildlife there.
Excellent choice. I love it there too. Stephen, thank you very much indeed for telling us about that.
Thank you for having me.
I was talking there to Stephen Werrell, Senior Project Officer at the Herts and Middlesex Wildlife Trust, and hoping to be a dog owner himself in the near future. Now, we're super lucky that we have some great sites for ground nesting birds like skylarks right on our doorsteps, places like Hartwood and Jersey Farm Woodland Park, and in both of those places there are helpful signs telling us the areas that we and our dogs should stay away from so that the birds can nest in peace and ensure that we can enjoy their intoxicating song for years to come. And bluebell woods are something we're also blessed with, so let's ensure that generations to come can enjoy them too by ensuring that the footprints of us and our dogs are only on the footpaths, even if it looks like the best photo is from over there in the bluebells. And finally, just a quick reminder about Easter recycling. Now, Easter eggs do often come with a huge amount of packaging, but fortunately, most of it can be recycled. Now, the see-through plastic bit, that can go into your black recycling bin, along with plastic bottles and trays. The cardboard box, that can be squashed down and go in the box along with your paper. And the foil that goes around the chocolate eggs, well, that can be recycled too. To recycle the foil, gather as many bits of foil together as you can, scrunch them up into a ball at least the size of a golf ball before putting it into your black recycling bin along with your tin cans. And recycling the foil is really important as aluminium takes 95% less energy to make from recycled material than from or from the ground. I'm going to be with you at the same time next week, but until then, thank you for listening.